I'm Alan Steinfeld, and this program is about the evolution of our consciousness, how we are moving forward into becoming really a new species, a new race of human beings that are more fulfilled in our life's purpose, that are more expanded in our consciousness, more aware in our bodies. And that's why I'm talking to tonight's guest, Lisa Carrillo. And she is a relationship coach, a sex therapist, a sex coach, really, and a dating coach. But her, I think Lisa's main gift is that she is able to really relax into her body, be present, and help people experience pleasure, pleasure in their own bodies. Lisa, thanks for being here.
Thank you. I'm really pleased to be here.
I know. I don't think that was a smooth introduction. How would you classify your work?
You know, expanding our ability to experience pleasure is a process of opening ourselves, of connecting, of surrendering, of listening, of being profoundly present so that sensation moves through our whole body. So I use the body as an anchor, but at the same time, I'm working with all kinds of relationship dynamics so that people get to connect and really enjoy and keep enjoying more and more and more the possibilities of sensual pleasure.
But when you say sensation moving through your body, of course, you talk about the sensual, but even in this moment, there's sensation moving through your body. You're hearing the sound, you're looking around. I mean, do you apply it then to the everyday moment as well?
Completely. That's one of the great things, you know, practicing daily a pleasure practice. And for me, that's clitoral stroking, has me practice being more present and more aware and more tuned into that natural rhythm of pleasure in my body. And then that expands and influences all the rest of the time.
We can go into clitoral stroking in a minute, but let's talk also about your history, because you didn't start out this way. I mean, I would guess you came from a pretty regular, normal, probably uptight American family, right?
Well, I definitely took it, well, it was definitely conservative. I took it to the next level. So I didn't start masturbating until my senior year of college. And that time is when I finally learned that touching breasts was actually part of having sex. I didn't even know that asses were a sexual turn-on until I was 33.
Uh-huh. What started, I think you told me, but I didn't remember what it was. What started you exploring into the world of sexual awakening? What happened?
I had already started on becoming more present. I really saw that as a way of experiencing truth, which is only what is. Not our descriptions or ideas of it, just what is. And also, it requires being responsive moment by moment. So dropping all defenses, all expectations, all ideas of who I am or who the other person should be, so that each moment we experience the newness of who we are. So when I heard about clitoral stroking, it matched for me two different important areas. One was becoming more present, because I saw immediately that it was a positive feedback loop. And secondly, I knew that I did not know what was going on in regards to sex. Intercourse for me was painful, and I knew there was a lot more that I was experiencing.
Right. And I just also want to say, now you work with couples, individuals, about how they can experience more pleasure now, because you've really delved into this. And in a way, it's everyone's birthright to experience the pleasure of their body, isn't it?
Yes. And it's an amazing sense of abundance to realize how much pleasure, and it increases. You know, I started this practice in 2006, and just this year I've reached peaks I have never reached before.
Peaks of pleasure?
So it's never ending.
Are you saying peaks of pleasure?
Yes, yes, peaks of pleasure. New sensations, new intensity, new sensations running through my whole body.
But isn't it amazing that that is available to everyone and probably just a very small percentage of people ever experience that?
Yes, it seems to be cutting edge. It's not as common as it could be. But when we experience it, there's this natural sense of abundance to realize that this level of pleasure is here, available all the time. And when we give ourselves permission to really explore it, then that abundance carries over into being much more generous in all our relationships and all of life.
So, do you say is it more pleasurable when someone is with you and, so you're not doing it on your own? Would you say that's part of the pleasure, of sharing the fun?
Yes, absolutely. Because, if you think about it, no one gives a massage and receives a massage at the same time. You know, it's much more fun to just be totally in receiver mode so you can relax fully. And that's the same thing with clitoral stroking. Being able to fully relax and open and follow the sensation with no goal is this wonderful building full experience.
But so then tell me, so you got into this because you knew there was more for you, but I guess you had no idea what was really in store. If you could just tell the audience that first experience that got you sort of on this track.
Sure. The very first experience was an invitation from somebody that I met at a dance, and he was asking me questions about my past relationships, and I saw them as a series of failures, and I could tell from his questions that he saw them as perfectly designed for me to get something from each one. And so I asked him, well, where did you get this training? And he spoke of the Welcome Consensus, and then he said that he had gotten training in how to stroke a woman's clitoris. And that really sparked my interest. So I asked, he said, are you interested? I said, I'm very interested. How much does it cost? He said, it's free. And I said, okay, well, when could I have it? He said, this afternoon. I said, great. So I went to his place and he stroked my clitoris and there was no goal. He was exploring my clitoris. He was being present to it. He was focused in a way I had never felt before. And I could tell that there was a lot more potential there than I was even tuning into. So within 2 months, I quit my corporate job and I went and spent $20,000 and 3 weeks and was trained in how to open my body and how to see my partners on my side so that I could completely surrender.
Yeah, we'll talk about that philosophy about the partner on your side, but I also think it's important to cover the idea that you were okay about opening your body with someone that you weren't in a relationship with, that you maybe didn't even intend to have a relationship with. And I think a lot of women stop there, and men too, for some reason. And is that an appropriate thing? I mean, how do you talk about that? About, you give demos, you use your body in teaching, and yet you're not in a relationship probably with a lot of these people. So how do you make that bridge between the two, and does it need to be even made?
There's a call within us that we know what is right for us. And I knew it was right. There was no doubt for me at that moment. Fortunately, I wasn't in a relationship, so that helped me have the freedom at that point. But when I see how it's done completely on a friendly basis, you know, it's like sharing yoga together, like sharing a gourmet meal together, or sharing an exquisite piece of music together. There's no goal beyond that single experience. It's absolutely friendly.
But what I know, I can see that in you, but why does it get so confused in most people, right? What is the problem?
You know, I think if there's anything we're not allowed to admit, is that we aren't good at sex. Uh-huh. So we have to make sure we do things where we're protecting our image about sex. So we share our sexuality with people just where we feel absolute certainty that we're going to win. And you know, it turns out a really powerful change in your perspective in all of life. And maybe there's some intuition about that rather than efforting, rather than seeing life as a struggle, once you start prioritizing pleasure, you start to realize that there's a lot of intuition that as we tune into that, we can drop into just an easy flow of feeling what's right in each moment. And, you know, that's contrary to a lot of our very strong work ethic.
Right, the pleasure principle.
Yes.
But why does it also get so caught up with relationship and love and I don't know, it seems like they're two, sex and love and relationship and marriage, and they're all sort of woven together in our culture, I suppose, isn't it?
Well, you know, I don't know if there's ever an answer for why, and I'm definitely more focused on what we're going toward. But the best hypothesis I can give you is that we are constantly, as a race, growing and learning and expanding. And there was a time when we weren't so good at putting ourselves in the other person's shoes. And we created rules to try to mandate kindness. Mm. And as we grow, we start to find and link into an inner guide of kindness that really far surpasses any rules. And once we actually can tune into that natural lovingness, now we have a higher calling that actually sets a higher standard. And it turns out some of the restrictions don't apply.
I just love how you reframe the whole idea of sexuality and pleasure in terms of kindness. I think that is a beautiful way of looking at it. And of course it's kind. If someone is giving you pleasure and you're giving them pleasure and you're receiving pleasure, that's probably the kindest thing you could do for anybody, right?
Yes. Yes. You know, when one person is the giver and the other person is the receiver, then that whole attention really is an amazing gift to have somebody see you and feel you and notice you. You know, when I'm feeling that, it's a really nourishing experience.
Mm. Actually, I did see a demo with you, and I guess he's sort of your current mainstream partner, your main person, right? I mean, George.
George is a wonderful practice partner for me, yes.
Well, I just saw how much you were grateful to him. You kept saying thank you. Even in your deepest sense of pleasure, you were acknowledging that him, what he was doing. And that was really a beautiful thing to see. And
Thank you.
I appreciate that. So and also it's so, in a way, innocent. You make it in the whole thing, the whole act, the whole idea of pleasure, really an innocent practice. It doesn't have any any weird, sleazy, none of that stuff. It's just like right up front. And can that be the current paradigm of the planet? I mean, how do we make that our sexual paradigm as opposed to what it is now, or what it has been? And
right. You know, I think I'd say two things. One is dropping goal orientation. Then there's no manipulation. There's no game playing. You know, we trust that what is right now is full and complete. And tuning in into the fullness of this moment is the place where we're most connected to the fullness of the next moment. So it can only, it just gets better and better from there. And the second thing is really recognizing that our partner is on our side. You know, ultimately men want to please women. And when we start to see that and not think that, okay, well, we have to give to get because they want this and I want that and we're going to have to compromise. And oh my gosh, it just gets really entangled.
But what would your answer be to all the sexual abuse and sexual violence and all those awful things that have been associated with sexuality that are totally opposite of pleasure? How would you deal with it if you were sort of in charge of that for the planet?
You know, hurt people hurt people.
Yeah.
And the way that we stigmatize it after an act, the injury keeps happening over and over because we've decided it was a wrong experience. And that makes it shameful in every memory. And so people end up constantly traumatizing themselves because the judgments that go along with the memory. So I would definitely start there.
So what would you say to someone who has been traumatized and who's now starting to open to the idea that, you know, sex can be pleasurable, but there's a memory of trauma?
Well, I'd say it's kind of a two-pronged approach. One is really having compassion for their experience and questioning their beliefs about it. Because there's the moment of experience, and then there's all the beliefs about it that add to it. You know, Byron Katie has a wonderful worksheet that takes you through how to question those things and her website, The Work.
Right.
And then the second thing is considering that to shut themselves off from pleasure is to punish themselves. It's cutting off their nose to spite their face.
Right.
So baby steps of surrendering enough to have a couple strokes and just feel what it is and be in their body in such a way that there's no judgment, no expectation. There's pure sensation.
Right. And I think it is a retraining for both men and women. I think, you know, a lot of men are goal-oriented. And I think what you're saying and coaching people is that, you know, if a man is giving a woman pleasure, then in a way that's the goal. That is the reorientation, isn't it?
Yes. Yeah. It seems to come a little more naturally for women to lose the goal orientation. And as men stroke women, they start experiencing the cadence of that full ride with separate crescendos. And it ultimately affects their own sensuality. So a man who's been stroking a woman for a while will often find himself having more expanded orgasms and himself riding waves of pleasure with less goal orientation. So, yeah, it definitely comes full circle.
Right. And then what you said before is that men are really on women's side, whether they're in a relationship or not, they do want it. Men are the givers in a sense, and the women's are the receivers. And most women, a lot of women, don't want to receive for some reason. Or is that just my weird distortion?
Well, you know, receiving requires surrendering.
Uh-huh.
And surrendering means letting go of our own expectations, letting go of whether or not the ride is going to go the way we thought it should. And, you know, that's kind of the challenge in all of life, right? To just totally let go to what is. So, I mean, you think it would be easy, but it's not. And there's this wonderful feedback loop. You know, the more we surrender, the more the sensation flows through our body. And so then we're encouraged to surrender more. And it's endless. You can relax deeper and deeper and deeper. For the woman to surrender to the man, she's deciding that he can feel into her body and give her a ride better than she could give herself.
Uh-huh.
And ironically, when a woman is clenching or not surrendering, the man actually can't feel into her body. So the whole thing goes askew.
So how do you tell the women, how do you coach these women to surrender? Because it really is, in a sense, up to the woman. Because the men are there like little puppy dogs, right? You know, wagging their tails. And women, you know, are there in the position to either be open or not. I mean,
mm-hmm. Well, I mean, there is a lot for men to learn, like
right.
How to really listen to a woman. Sometimes a man is pleasing a woman in order to get off himself or to prove something about himself. And when his attention starts moving into his own ego, then he loses the thread of her pleasure, and then her body becomes a tool for him to achieve his objective. So there's a lot of listening for him to learn.
Mm-hmm.
And then for the woman, you know, I didn't know at all how much pleasure a man gets from a turned on woman. You know, I didn't know that turn on primarily starts in the female body, as in throughout the mammalian world. And so I really couldn't even comprehend or imagine what it's like to be a man where turn on doesn't just start in your body. Like, I can get turned on so easily from, you know, some wonderful inspiration I have that gets me wet. And so it just didn't occur to me what it'd be like to be a man whose main source comes through another person. And so once I realized that, it totally made sense to me that men love to give to women, and there's nothing I need to give in return. There's no trading.
Right. It is like that. But don't women get turned on by seeing a man turn on, or not really?
Well, you know, I read a research article about that, and not predominantly. They actually said that a woman, and these were heterosexual women, shown pictures of, you know, very, you know, the kind of man that, you know, most people would attribute to as a prime specimen.
Right.
Or shown pictures of another woman. And there's a third picture, I forget what it was. And while the woman verbalized that they were turned on by the man, they were also following their bodily responses, and they weren't. They were turned on by the picture of the woman.
Maybe that has to do with mirror neurons, where you actually mirror someone else's sensations by feeling it in your body. So you're saying these turned on women were turned on because they were responding to these pictures of other women.
Yes, exactly.
Uh-huh. Maybe that's a good case for pornography or something. I don't know. But so then the women, so then what turns a woman on? What is it, the total attention of the man? I mean, not sex, but beyond sex, just the man, and this is what I've heard, is that when the man gives the woman his total energetic, you know, attention, that's when they feel safe enough to open up and surrender deeper.
Yeah, attention and approval. Basically, a woman will naturally start to turn on when she fully enjoys her womanhood. You know, the best image I have for this is of a cat. And when you see a cat who's really in its catly glory, just laid out on a bed, you know, its tail twitches and you can just see it's loving being a cat. You just want to go over and pet it. Mm-hmm. And that's the same way when a woman is just turned on, it's that same falling back into true enjoyment of her being. Mm-hmm. And approval from other people can be a doorway or a pointer that helps her return to that spot.
Approval, that is a really key point. So when women feel like they're okay to be themselves, that relaxes their bodies in ways that may be different than men. You know, men are also seeking approval, but maybe they don't associate it so much with their body, more their minds or their action or their will. Or is it different that way, you think?
Well, I think fundamentally we all want approval of our whole being.
Right.
Women tend to have the most doubts around their attractiveness as a whole person, not just physically. Mm-hmm. And men tend to have the most doubts around their competence, you know, their ability to give pleasure, to provide, or to make a woman happy. But ultimately, we all want to feel our rightness. And we want to be seen and approved of, that we are a right person. In fact, the truth is, we are innocent, far more innocent than any of us realizes.
Yeah, talk about that, because I got that sense from you, even in your most ecstatic pleasure, especially in that, you were so childlike in a way. You were so pure. There was a purity about you receiving pleasure.
Yes, you know, let me just make 2 points on that. One is that the more that I have opened to pleasure, the more loving a person I have become.
Mm.
So it really does feel like it's not just a gift to myself, it's to the whole world. And the second thing is, this unfolding, this world, this universe is it. And the moment we start to try to imagine some other possibility, some way things should be, I mean, it's as distancing as saying, I wish I were on the moon right now. I wish I were on the moon right now. I mean, there's nowhere to go.
Wait, explain that a little more. So you're saying this is it, this body, this moment, this sensation is it. You're saying that.
Yes. What we have right now, this is it. There's nothing else.
This is it, meaning just this. This just, is that what you're actually meaning?
Yes, literally. Just
I don't know why it's so hard for me to get that.
Any other idea we have is not real.
And I think that's a difficult concept for me to take. But
think about an orange.
Yeah.
You know, you can see a picture of an orange. You can have somebody say the word orange. But are any of those an orange?
No.
No. An orange is that thing that happens in your mouth where there's this explosion of sweet, tangy juice.
That's an orange. So, I mean, I know it. I mean, I get the concept, but I think it's just so simple and so immediate. I'm trying to do something with it, you know?
Well, yeah. The moment that we impose anything on this experience right now, we start causing ourselves pain.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a great thing about being in a pleasure practice, because I have become more and more sensitive to what is furthering my joy and furthering my generosity and what is taking me into pain.
So do you avoid those painful areas or do you go into them fully present as well?
Well, if I'm creating my own pain by coming up with some should about this moment, you know, I'm not going to stay there very long.
Right.
Now, sure, there's times when there's a holding in my body, a constriction from a past experience that I didn't have the resources to handle, and so I created this constriction. Yes, then in that case, I go into it and fully approve of my response, of the experience with compassion, and open, and, you know, just let it release and process through.
Right.
And even that is perfect. You know, once we accept our own rightness and the rightness of our experience, then we are living in the understanding of the perfection of this unfolding, that it could be no other way. And there's nothing greater for being able to open up our bodies.
Yeah, I think you really are doing something unique. I mean, there's a lot of schools of thought along this line, but I think you're taking it in a way the furthest because you're trusting yourself. You're not listening to anyone else tell you that, and you're discovering these new territories on your own. I mean,
well, thank you. I mean, I've had a lot of influences. Many of these ideas are taught by Lafayette Morehouse, and as I've mentioned, Byron Katie, A.H. Almas, Ajahshanti.
One Taste, of course. I mean,
yeah, they've built on, or they've taken some of the work from Lafayette Morehouse to create their work. Right. So yes, there's a lot out there. Obviously, my experience comes from my particular blend, and it's definitely experiential. I can't teach anything I haven't experienced.
But that's the thing. You're taking all these jumping off places, but then you've sort of relaxed into your own body. You've discovered even a deeper truth that's in your own presence, in your own sensation. That's what I get about you.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I do. I mean, there was a moment when I decided that I was going to divorce when I was, you know, long before I was introduced to all of this. And up until then, I'd been struggling and struggling and struggling. And at the moment that I gave myself permission to finally divorce, it was like the floodgates of love had been opened in my heart and I loved the world. Because I felt like, wow, you mean I have the permission to go again, try again? And now it's like that feeling of just expansive love is this true guide that calls me, it turns out, I would never have expected, into richer pleasure because that makes me more open, makes me more generous. It's so intertwined.
But it's sort of a contradiction that divorcing, well, some people think of divorce as a sort of shutting down or breaking away. I mean, what was your relationship then after to your partner that you were divorcing?
You know, that was before I had all of these tools. So I have no idea how it could have happened had I had all of these tools. Uh-huh. But certainly at that moment, it was the best decision I knew available. And what's been great is he has remained wonderful friends with my parents. In fact, they're the godparents of his children that he has now with his second wife. And it's almost like I was able to gift my parents with this son and gift him with parents.
Oh, nice. That is great. So when you are coaching people then, and you coach couples and individuals, I guess you coach men and women differently. How do you coach them, like, let's say in dating? Somebody's looking for a date.
Yes.
A man. What do you, or a woman? I mean, I guess you approach it differently, but, or is it the same?
There's one common principle to both. And that is so many people go into a date in evaluation mode. So they're they're not really with their date. They're outside observing and evaluating all the time. And there's no connection to be had when both people are doing that.
So what do you mean evaluating? Can you explain what that looks like?
They're saying, well, would this be somebody I could live with? Do I like that person? Do they fit for me? Oh, that doesn't seem like it's a good thing. You know, there's this string of judgments. Uh-huh. And I say, you can't experience somebody while you're judging them. So for the date, this is a relationship. Maybe it's a 1 hour relationship, but right now this is a relationship. So be wholly in the relationship so that you can actually experience what it's like to be in relationship with each other. So open, share.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just be, allow the connection to happen. And only from after experiencing that connection, do you have enough information to decide, is this somebody you'd want to be friends with? Somebody you want a second date with? You know, then only then can you decide.
So be total, total with that person. Totally total.
Yeah, not only just with them, but like in for this moment, you're in relationship together. Be like you would be in relationship and experience what that's like. How are you both in relationship?
I think that's the problem with relationships, is that it gets sort of automatic, gets routine, and then boring. And then, of course, people resort to shutting down and putting up walls and... So how do you then coach people to not be in that automaticness, you know, which is what seems to happen in relationships?
Mm-hmm. You know, I think the defendedness happens first.
Uh-huh.
We have some kind of fear about fully being seen or fully recognizing how much we're loved. You know, we put requirements on what love should look like, and we defend ourselves, and then we settle into these non-spoken agreements. You know, we won't talk about this. We will always do this. We can count on that. This particular boundary will never check out. And that, when once we're doing that, we're really not being present with each other. Being present is being soft, being open, feeling who the other person is right now and responding, bringing our concerns vulnerably to each other, and then hearing what they have to say and taking the next step from that place, not from what the history was.
Yeah, I think that's sort of part of that. You let go of the history, you let go of the past, you let go of the resentments, and then you start fresh in the moment with that person.
Right.
But that, yes, exactly. People, yeah, no, I think you have a whole understanding of a new approach to relationships. And when is it then, I guess, appropriate if you're with someone to have sex with them or to start that? Or is that something that should automatically be open if two people are total with each other? Or is that... build up a slow thing and should be approached slowly or not? I mean, what's your ideas about that?
You know, I think it's all linked into goal orientation. You know, the less goal oriented we are, the more in the moment we can share pleasure without attaching significance and attaching additional obligations to it. But if we're putting goals on it, like, you know, this person is going to do this for me so many times, and or do it to me this particular way, or do it to me and only me. You know, once we start to put on layers and layers of expectations, then we start to have hesitations about, well, when can we do this?
Right.
Now, what I do like about the stroking practice is it does not include intercourse. Now, the technique and all that I've learned from it has changed my intercourse dramatically.
Mm-hmm.
That's a whole other thing there. But by not including intercourse, it gives a wonderful way of being present with another person and exchanging sexual energy without taking it to the level that more bonding hormones kick in.
Is that the thing with intercourse, that there's a certain other hormones that are released that aren't really? I mean, why would they be released more? I mean, I know why psychically you're inside someone and you're melting kind of energy fields, but why are there hormones that are released more with intercourse?
Yeah, you know, there's, what is it, I think 15 different hormones that cycle through our body throughout a sexual exchange, and it's different for each person. You know, some people have a lot of bonding from kissing and affection. Some people have almost no bonding even from intercourse. Mm-hmm. So there's definitely a full range there. But in general, people tend to release more bonding hormones during intercourse than most other sex acts.
But I'm just saying, is that a psychological thing?
No, it's biological.
It's biological. There's actually some hormones that are stimulated, because I guess it becomes the whole like survival of the family thing. Is that sort of an innate evolutionary sort of process?
Or? Yeah, it just prepares a couple for parenting.
Uh-huh. But do you think our natural state is monogamous, or is it to be more collective, like those monkeys, the bonobos?
Well, I wouldn't propose a single state for every human being, that's for sure.
Mm.
But looking at our behavior, I would have to say that total monogamy doesn't seem to be a predominant natural state.
Right. But where does love fit into all this? The idea of love. Maybe love itself is a fantasy, but where does that, you know, the idealness of the perfect, you know, spiritual, emotional, sexual, physical partner, you know, that you're in love with, you know, they could be all those things, but if you don't have love, then there's something missing. But, you know, but I don't know, is it a kind of modern fantasy, myth?
Well, fortunately, that we don't have to give up on love, that's for sure.
Do you need to get that call?
No, and I apologize for that.
No, it's okay. It's okay.
But
tell me where love fits into the whole thing, or
yes,
if it does.
First of all, there's different kinds of love. So we use one word for so many different things. We love our friends, and we can love somebody that we have as a stroking partner. And it sounds like the love you're mostly talking about is that life partner kind of love.
Right. Falling in love. I'm falling in love.
Yeah. I think we all want to have somebody who knows us well, who knows our history, who can give us approval when we forget, and who at the end of our lives can share with us our victories and our challenges and have been with us through it all. You know, there's something very tender about that. And there's an immense opportunity for growth when you commit to somebody like that, because now you don't have an escape when things get tough. You actually work through it. So I certainly find that primary partner, there's just nothing that replaces it.
And so, I mean, but that's the sexuality myth, is like, that's the person, that primary partner becomes also your sexual mate. And you're saying, I think that's what that's not necessarily true.
Right. It's not necessarily true. And I think everybody finds what feels comfortable for them. For some people, that is how they want to be. Personally, I love the fact that I will encounter somebody who I feel a lot of kinship with, who, you know, I just feel that we have some common experiences in being present and letting go of expectations. And when I run across somebody like that, I often will want to have some kind of a sexual energy exchange with them. And so a clitoral stroking, a manual stroking with the hands is a wonderful way to really tune into each other's bodies, share that energy without going into intercourse that can start making things more complicated. And having partners that just want to do that kind of research with me is really fun for a couple reasons. One, because we don't have all the other challenges that a relationship might have, sometimes I will experience relaxing or surrendering in a different way, and then I can bring that back into my relationship. Or they may notice something about my clitoris that causes them to do a different kind of a stroke, and I can bring that back into my relationship. Mm-hmm. So there's lots of opportunities to share sexual energy in a way that's just very open-hearted and isn't about jumping into bed with anybody that you know you feel hot for in a given moment.
Right, but so many women, particularly, are not that way, and is that out of fear? What do you think? Because they're in a way they're depriving themselves of pleasure.
Well, you know, to be honest,
yes, yeah,
most men aren't that skilled,
right,
in pleasing a woman, so she's not going to get very good sex until she's gotten somebody to know her body over a long period of time, hopefully.
But it doesn't even get that far usually because, you know, there's those other walls up. But I guess those walls are about expectation too, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. Expectation is the from both sides.
Right. Right. So then then what do you say when you're coaching people in dating? Just you say be in the relationship. I mean, be total. And then when you're total, people always think intercourse. But you're saying that's not necessarily true.
No, right. I'm not saying intercourse isn't until you want to have intercourse. Sexually, the more we have the capacity to fully put our attention on another person, especially as men, mm-hmm. to fully put our attention on another person, the more we're going to be able to tune in and do what is in sync with their body and their desire. And from a woman's standpoint, the more we can see that the man is truly pleased by her pleasure,
mm-hmm.
rather than that he's trying to get something from her.
Right, right. That's what opens a woman. Was that a big breakthrough for you? Can you talk about your...
Oh, yes. You know, after I did that course, I had jury duty. So I was downtown just a week later, and I saw all these men walking around. And suddenly, I thought, all these men would be happy to make me happy. And I found myself in a world of friends. And up until that point, I had seen men as people I had to compete with, people I had to manipulate, people I had to come to some compromise because certainly they were not going to want what I wanted. You know, there was just no hope of being forthright and straightforward with a man. Mm. And then it changed and I saw the world full of friends.
Wow. I mean, that kind of point of view would totally change the world and all relationships if we happen to have those, that awakening on that level.
Yes. Oh, golly. If we could see each other as friends, you know, men haven't experienced the challenges women have had being born into a man's world. So they haven't had to necessarily develop some of the sensitivities that women have. And so they can do things that women perceive as hurtful, but it's more just that they're being oblivious.
Like what are you talking about specifically?
Men can make a request that sounds very entitled to a woman.
Like what? Can you be specific? Just make it up.
Why can't you just... why can't we just have sex anytime we want? Or, you know, why can't you just get in the mood? Or,
Right.
You know, why can't she just be nice to me? You know, it's like the man expects the woman to somehow be an accessory to his happy life.
Well, I think women expect that too, in a way as well. You know, just, I mean, there's
we definitely are very good at having plenty of expectations in both directions.
So how do we shift that then?
Curiosity. If we have absolute certainty that were we in the other person's shoes, we would make a similar choice. Then, rather than judging a response, we come at it with curiosity. Oh, well, why are you feeling that way? What is making you do that? You know, the moment we move into curiosity, we start to move towards the path of approval again.
Yeah, you know, I think it's just very refreshing to talk to you because there is such an innocence there, you know, and were you always like this? I'm just curious. because you're not defended at all. You're just present. And did you have to overcome? I guess you did, as you talked about that divorce or whatever. There was stuff you did overcome.
I was a little hypocrite, that's for sure. I had all kinds of judgments about all kinds of things. I was a little Puritan, junior high school girl who thought nobody should be kissing anybody.
Really? That's funny. And then what shifted? Was it that one session with that guy that just shifted everything?
You know, it came in multiple stages. I remember hearing at one point, forgiveness eventually becomes unnecessary. And that seemed impossible to me. I mean, forgiveness, I thought, was one of the major virtues.
Mm-hmm.
So that started me searching down the path of perfection. And so that was a turning point. Realizing that ultimately everything is unfolding as well as it possibly can.
Let me just take that in. You're saying forgiveness becomes unnecessary because it's all perfect in whatever it is?
Yes.
So if someone does something to us, they're not really doing something to us. It's just something that's happening.
Right, exactly. It's the best thing they knew to do at that moment.
But they could have not done that to us and it would have been less painful, right?
They couldn't. That is the lie that we tell ourselves.
Oh, because they, like the Byron Katie thing is like, how do you know they could have done it differently? Well, they didn't and therefore they couldn't, right?
Exactly.
Right.
It's really wishing that I could have said something with different words is as big a miracle as wishing that I could blink and be on the moon right now.
Right. But it's also, you can learn, let's say you do something that maybe wasn't fully conscious, then you don't have to do it that way the next time.
Yes. And that is the difference. One is looking into the past and thinking the past could be different. The other is absorbing in all of our experiences and letting them unfold into learning in the future. And those are completely different things.
Okay, that's a big piece for me to absorb. So learning from the past without trying to have to change it gives me actually more momentum to change the future.
Yes.
Because I'm not regretting the past.
Right.
So then the future is an unknown.
Yes, the future is unknown. Absolutely. And who we are right now is different than who we were 5 seconds ago. And who we will be in 5 seconds is different again.
So is that... So then in a way, there's no decisions to make. It's again like Byron Katie, but then you also decide, you yourself, Lisa, decide that you want to have pleasure or this or that. You're You're making a decision for something, which is okay. I'm not judging it, but you are saying, I want this to happen, instead of just being in the flow of existence without any choice at all.
Decisions are part of the flow of existence, aren't they?
They could be, or yeah, I guess that's one way. I guess that's a way of looking at it. It's like, yes, this teacher I had, Paul Lowe, would say that, if this is what comes up to do, then not doing it would be getting in the way of existence. So it's like whatever arises within the individual is the movement of existence, in a sense.
Yes, absolutely.
Mm. But you said in the beginning you have a daily practice of clitoral stroking.
Yes.
I mean, like every day it's the same person, or is it every day? Not necessarily a different person, but what do you mean every day? Can you talk about that practice?
Yes. So when I'm living with a partner, then pretty much it's my partner who's stroking me every day. And what's great about that is he's discovering more and more of my body, discovering how my clitoris changes, discovering my cycles through the month. And I'm constantly surprised. I cannot tell you how many times I've laid down to be stroked and thought, I don't know that I'm really in the mood. I have no idea how this is going to go. And then that can be one of the very best experiences. Well, so it's wonderfully surprising.
Just tell the technique again, because people listening are probably interested in exactly what that is.
Yes. So without going into the full detail, the main thing is, first of all, using lubricant, because you want to keep the clitoris soft and moist and tender. And stroking the clitoris, literally staying right on the clitoris. So you're moving maybe a millimeter, 2 millimeters, and dividing the clitoris into sections. You know, I think of my clitoris as having 9 sections. So that there's the top left section for me is home base.
That's the most sensitive part, huh?
Right. And so I use the lubricant to gently stroke there slowly and lightly so that my body is reaching for the sensation. Uh-huh. And then pausing, really absorbing it, letting it flow through my body, and then going again. And then starting to build crescendos by moving to the other side or by quickening the stroke or adding a little more pressure. Each of those changes starts to build the sensation and create the separate crescendos. And it's following that, the more I relax and feel and pull that sensation into me, the more that I can get flutters and waves and tingles just cascading through my body. Sometimes I feel like I'm just a fountain overflowing, and I never know what I'm going to feel any particular day. And the sensation starts to densify and build into all of my body, and I stay absolutely relaxed, which really intensifies it.
How do you stay relaxed when the sensation is building towards, I guess, the climax, isn't it?
Right. You know, most people climax, or certainly I used to climax, by constricting, and that's trying to force the sensation into a small pocket right in my pussy, and then it gets overwhelmed and it goes into an over-the-edge orgasm or climax. Right. This instead is going for the richest sensation. So that motivates me to relax and let the sensation intensify through my whole body.
So you know, and it's no longer localized, the sensation.
Right. It's not localized. Exactly.
And it's because you're not tensing up. I mean, you're consciously relaxing. And how do you move the sensation throughout your whole body then?
The more I relax, it will move. You know, if you think about a baby, our skin is one organ. And if you think about a baby, you tickle a baby one place, like their foot, their whole body quivers. You know, they're still all connected. And as we get older, we separate our body parts for good reason, but that isn't how our body naturally is. Right. So the more relaxed I am, I mean, you know, if you tickle just on the top of your hand, you can feel that sensation go up your arm. It's not that hard. It's kind of like if you strike a gong, mm-hmm. you can hear it for 5 minutes later if you really are listening.
But you've also trained, I mean, or been with your body enough to be in that awareness.
Yes, right. It is an ongoing practice for sure. But the great thing about it is it's fun right from the beginning. So it's not like you're waiting to get really good in 5 years. You know, it's good from the get-go and it just gets better and better.
Do you feel you can only take so much or could you just do that all day long? I mean, why not if it's pleasurable?
Well, the most I had in one day was 10 stroking sessions. And at the end of those sessions, I was in love with everyone. So apparently we can take quite a lot.
So why don't you want that happening all the time? Or has it become an addiction, would you say, or no?
Well, you know, an addiction is when we are unable to handle other things in our life and we use that as a substitute. So I wouldn't say it's an addiction, especially because it's becoming more and more present. So it's not an escape at all. Right. Why don't I do that every day?
Yeah, well, and all day long for that matter.
Right. Well, I do enjoy interacting with all of my capacities. So, you know, experiencing a piece of art or experiencing nature or connecting with another person talking, you know, those are also richly pleasurable and are creating nice rhythms in my life. So, you know, I guess I like it all.
Right. I understand that because you are a pretty well-rounded person. But I have do you think women have a greater capacity for pleasure than men, or is it just they are more open?
I think women's biology is set up to more easily not be goal-oriented.
Mm.
So that sets it up to be able to focus on pleasure rather than the goal. Now, at Lafayette Morehouse, they tell amazing stories of men in orgasm for hours. So,
really, how is that possible? I mean,
the same thing. It's when we're utterly, utterly relaxed and we notice each set sensation and follow it through our body, then there isn't this clenching or moving or forcing it into some kind of a channel. And so it just ripples and it builds and builds. The ripples build and build until what felt like just mild ripples turns out to be these huge cascades.
So it's not climacting for the men. It's like you say, it's an ongoing ripple of a peak sensation or something.
Well, you know, again, I feel like who am I to describe their experience?
Right.
Yeah, at Lafayette Morehouse, they described how the man was in contractions and there was some amount of ejaculate coming out pretty continuously.
Continuous ejaculate. All right, that's a little exhausting, it sounds like, but...
Yes, you know, we all think that when even women, when they think of being in orgasm for a half hour or an hour, that's got to be exhausting. It's not the sensation that's exhausting. It's the fact that we tend to clench up and it's our clenching that makes us exhausted. If we weren't clenching up, it's just like receiving a massage.
But they also say in the Taoist practice that the men should circulate the ejaculate and not have it flow out of them, and that way they conserve their chi. And I think there might be something to that. I mean, just personally,
you know, I've definitely had men describe the benefits that they've had from not ejaculating as often mm-hmm. by circulating the energy.
Yeah.
So certainly there are people who experience that as a benefit, and I leave it up to men to discover if that's something that is a benefit to them or not.
Right. But I think women then having their So you don't necessarily, though, have a climax. You have more waves and ongoing flow of orgasmic pleasure.
Yeah, you know, I have so many different kinds. And basically, when the sensation gets so overwhelmingly good and it's better than what I used to call an orgasm, I just call it an orgasm. And so, but what that can look like is so many different things.
Right.
It can be intense contractions for half an hour. It can be these billowing waves that I can barely contain. You know, it's only because I've relaxed myself so deeply that I can contain it. So yes, it's just amazing all the sensations that are possible.
Well, you're sort of like an explorer. You're going into unknown territories, which sort of makes me think about, is there a specific sexual physiology? I mean, of course there is, but that we have yet to discover. Is the body capable, perhaps, and maybe that's where you're going into developing and harnessing these untold areas that are latent within our physiology.
I fully agree with that. You know, as I mentioned, that I had painful intercourse for many years. Now it turns out that I have a very sensitive vagina. So there's a lot of really sensitive spots that, you know, I didn't really have to cultivate them. Just once I stopped feeling pain, that's what showed up.
What do you mean sensitive? That they are very
responsive
to like pleasure, though, right?
Yes, yes.
But I guess
now it's pleasurable.
But before it was painful.
Exactly.
Because they were very, very sensitive.
No, you know, as it turns out, think of when your hand gets numb from cold. As it comes back into feeling again, or numb from, you know, going to sleep, blocked off circulation, as it comes back into feeling, pain is the first sensation we feel.
Right, because that's blood reinvigorating the tissues.
Right, so I was so constricted that I wasn't having very much engorgement, and what I did experience was pain at first. You know, I was progressing down that progression.
Right. So you kept. Right. No, I get it. So, but the more the engorgement of the genitals happened, the more pleasure then you moved into. But you had to go through that phase.
Yes. Exactly. So, my body seemed pretty much set up for that from the get go. I don't know. I think everybody has the nerves. But some people have different levels of being tuned into those nerves. And what I teach is how to get more and more in tune to that. And people can become shut down because of different experiences they've had that made them shut down their sexuality. Or it could be simply a biological thing that, you know, just wasn't very much cultivated because they were not very body oriented.
But everyone has the potential. So if someone shut down, you would encourage them to keep working in that area.
Oh, absolutely. You know, at the very beginning, there were times when I was being stroked that it either felt painful or I didn't think I could feel anything. And I was instructed, name the sensation and don't use a word that indicates pain.
Right.
And, you know, I knew somebody was touching me. So if I knew somebody was touching me, I must have been feeling something. So I just gradually learned how to really tune into each specific sensation.
Was there a moment where you identified pleasure as pleasure?
You know, it was this gradual transition. On my clitoris actually was painful from the beginning to be directly touched. So, but that changed within the couple weeks of my training. And I would say, I don't remember how many days in, it started to transition, and it was a few days of transition. For my vagina, that actually was years of transition.
I see. For sex to become pleasurable.
Yeah, what happened was there were pleasurable sensations and then there were the pain sensations. And I just kept focusing on the pleasurable sensations and they kept growing and growing and the pain sensations decreased and decreased. And particularly the more I relaxed and engorged, the more rapid that change happened.
But a lot of pain and a lot of things, women maybe that I've known, are shut down due to emotional issues they feel. You know, and then it's dealing, don't they have to deal on the emotional level with releasing, or would you just bypass that and go to the physiology?
I like to go in with both. You know, women are often given mixed messages about how they're not supposed to go for pleasure. They aren't supposed to grab the cookie. That's not ladylike. You know, they're
grab
supposed
the cookie. What does that mean, grab the cookie?
You know, if there's a plate of cookies,
yeah.
If you grab the cookie off the plate, that's not ladylike. Boys are more likely to get away with that one.
Oh, I thought that was a sexual allusion you were saying.
Oh, well, you know, that turns out to be how everything is, you know. If they're too sexually extroverted, they're a slut. And it goes on and on about how women are taught not to aggress towards their pleasure.
Right. So you get over, you work with women to get over that by doing how? What do you do with them?
You know, first I just acknowledge, let's look at where this input came in from.
Mm-hmm.
And then consider adding on the viewpoint, because you can't undo something, but you can add something else and focus on it till it becomes the dominant new thing.
Right.
So for me, the biggest motivation was knowing that I was becoming a more loving, generous, happy person by going for pleasure.
Mm-hmm. That's good. That's good. I know it seems so amazingly simple. I think you can transform the world through this technology.
Oh, yeah. I mean, who would have time for war? If we were all enjoying ourselves.
I mean, that is the only purpose of the clitoris, is for joy, pleasure, right? I mean, that's what they say.
Yes, exactly.
It's the only function. And, of course, all the awful things that have been done about that, you know, the clitorectomies and all that stuff, you know, it's just barbaric, I suppose. And then when we realize we can have a society of pleasure that includes, you know, presence and consciousness and awareness.
Yeah, that is what I love. More and more people are getting to a state of being in tune with the natural, loving core of the universe. And it doesn't always necessarily feel as good as we expected, but there's a certain alive love that is the current of life. And when we're in tune to that, we have a lot more flexibility in how to respond, because we don't have to follow particular rules. We have the higher rule.
Would you say pleasure is how the universe loves us in that way?
Oh, wow. It's definitely one of the biggest ways of experiencing the love of the universe, for sure.
Mm. And what's interesting, that pleasure is available to everyone. As if they're in the body, if they're alive on any degree, they can experience pleasure. I mean, so, I mean, how do you just, you know, as we wrap up here, move from the sexual pleasure to just everyday pleasure, pleasure in whatever...
Yeah.
Yes.
They're completely tied together, because if we are not allowing ourselves to have pleasure all day long, then it's going to be very hard to go into a sexual experience. But all day long, we can be making choices that support our body. We can go to the bathroom when we need to go to the bathroom. We can sit in our chair comfortably. We can take stretches. We can pay attention to our settings so that there's beautiful things around us, there's beautiful sounds, You know, as we relax and open and let our senses savor all day long, we come already turned on to any sensual experience, any sexual experience that we go towards.
I guess we do have to consider ourselves fortunate to have that luxury. There's a lot of people who aren't even in the position to give that to themselves.
People who are consciously pursuing this are a very small percentage of the whole world. So it's an honor that we get to be part of that.
It's an honor. And I guess there are people suffering in war-torn countries and, you know, awful situations. But even perhaps those people, in whatever way, you know, can experience pleasure, because that's why we're all here.
Yes. It's true that our bodies are available to that anytime. And, you know, the more that we allow ourselves to experience pleasure, the more we want it for other people. But so the place that we will approach the war situations is going to be from a more compassionate, loving, generous place if we're in pleasure ourselves. If we're coming at it from a reformer, this has to be changed, it's wrong, it must be fixed, we're going to come at it with a certain amount of violence that might just end up perpetuating it all.
But also, let's just, if someone is suffering or in pain, would you say, I mean, what I would say is just be with the sensation, right? And don't identify that as suffering or pain, because it's just sensation. It may not be pleasant.
Yeah, pain happens, but suffering is definitely our added beliefs about it. And that is oftentimes 90% of the negative experiences are added ideas about it versus the actual sensation.
So then if someone is suffering, how would you use what you're aware of to bring them, you know, a little more joy?
Well, of course, it depends upon what it is that they're suffering about.
Well, if they're having physical pain, let's say.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, if they can't, if it's physical pain that, you know, they're stuck with for now, the more they can just become present in the sensation and accept whatever it comes with. Like, for example, certain kinds of pain prevent you from being able to walk upstairs. Well, if you just accept, oh, I'm not a person who walks upstairs anymore, there's much less suffering about that than if you're constantly agonizing, well, I can't walk upstairs. I can't walk upstairs.
I also think there's a way of loving, turning it around and loving, put the intention of love in that painful area will also shift the frequencies of that sensation. It'll change things. I know, let's say I've hit my hand and I just send a really loving, caring energy. It does help the healing even faster.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's, when we are open and accepting and approving, there's a whole lot more possible than when we're constricting and judging, for sure.
So what's coming up? I mean, you're going to be on a panel at the Meta Center that I'm hosting. That's March 28th, talking about these ideas, along with two other women who are also approaching these things from a similar, but, you know, not exactly the same angle, which makes an interesting conversation. What else is coming up for you?
Well, this Friday is a demonstration where I will be done and I'll be stroked and people can watch a live demonstration of that. And then the following 2 days, Saturday and Sunday, I'll be teaching with Anton so that people can learn how to do it themselves. And I teach it both from an understanding of the mentality, you know, what are the viewpoints we have that can contribute to building pleasure, and what are ones that we can add on, and then the actual technique.
And that's sexyspirits.com is doing those workshops with Lisa. So I guess if you just look at sexyspirits.com, and then you have your private practice, your private coaching practice, right?
Right. LovingOurLoveLife.com, which, it's really fun because people can come from any different place around dating or relationships or their sexuality, and they can be going for more or they can feel stuck, and there's always more.
Exactly. There's always more. That is a Morehouse expression, isn't it?
Yes. And my gosh, I never knew how true it was until I've been living it.
One comment about Morehouse, the Moore Lafayette, I mean, the principles that came out of that, they didn't seem to have the spiritual awareness that you have when you talk about pleasure. It's just,
you know, I don't know what level of awareness they have, because I definitely have experienced a very high level of awareness, but there's been a lot more language put upon it with Eckhart Tolle and Byron Katie. And so, you know, I've been very much integrated with a lot of these teachers. So there's a common language that has developed in the past couple of years that I'm able to integrate.
So where do you see your work going now?
You know, personally, I keep finding this wonderful interweaving of surrendering and finding myself more aware and less attached, like just feeling this moment's aliveness is it. So I see being able to bring in more people who have some sort of desire to be more present but haven't realized how integral their body and pleasure can be in that process.
That is a great thing for people to remember. Most of these people talking about presence, it's all a mental thing, and it's has to be brought back to the body.
Right. The body is present, you know, so it's like the shortcut is right here in front of us, part of us, and sometimes we don't even take advantage of it.
Well, and we're here to totally live here in this body, in this moment, in this pleasure possibility.
Right. We have no choice. It's what we're all doing. Just some of us are distracting ourselves with our thoughts and ideas about it.
I think, though, what I do have to say is people get maybe a wrong idea about what pleasure is. They think it has to be something, and you're sort of saying it's not anything, right? Pleasure is...
Right. I mean, if you're just simply resting as awareness, there's a definite life vibrancy in our body that feels really good. So it's as simple as that.
It's like a buzz. When you're really in your body, the body is just buzzing, isn't it?
Yes, that's a great way to describe it.
And then when you're adding a stimulation to that, then and you're present with that, I bet most people aren't even present when they're receiving pleasure. So they're not even experiencing the pleasure.
Yes. You know, because so goal-oriented, we generally pay attention to some small percentage, 10 or 20% of the sensations, because we're focusing only on the sensations that we know lead towards the climactic orgasm. Mm-hmm. And if we open and don't go towards a particular and explore all of our sensations, like, for example, right after we come, lots of times the cock and definitely the clitoris will feel suddenly way more sensitive. Well, it didn't just get new nerve endings.
Uh-huh.
It's always that sensitive. It's just we're so busy focusing on particular things, we're ignoring all those other sensations.
But there is a sensitivity that happens afterwards, though, that is a physiology. Because,
well, if we've been constricted, then cutting off the blood flow, then that could add some of the sensation increase, just because now there's more blood flow again. But for the most part, that same level of sensation is available the whole time. We're just not tuned into it.
Yes, that very sensitive level is just remarkable. So your whole body is a pleasure organism.
Organ. Yes, right. Yeah, and it's been fun to experience more of my body synced into my sexuality. But definitely, I can get wet and it doesn't have to be wet. You know, it doesn't have to be sexual. But art museums can be wonderfully moving for me. Nature.
I want to go to an art museum with you. No, because I'm into art.
Very good. We should do that.
I'm actually writing about art, and I'd be interested in your physiological perceptions.
No. Yes.
No, I am interested in art and different awarenesses of art. I'm actually going to be teaching a course in art, sort of art appreciation at an adult college here in New York. So, maybe you could come in to the class and, well, not talk about this, but something related to pleasure.
Yes, because fundamentally, it's the relaxation that is the doorway. So, you know, there are some people, I have a friend who will listen very relaxedly and intently to CDs over his, or, you know, to music over his iPod. And I can see his body is being bathed in pleasure. And it's definitely the sound, but it's also the way he's so relaxed. He's letting the music just reverberate through him. And it's that deep relaxation that allows the natural rhythm of pleasure. You know, there's an orgasmic pulsing in our bodies all the time when we fully relax. And it allows that full relaxation so that our vibrancy can buzz inside of us.
And also, I think there's a receptive way of looking at art where the images impact you.
Yes. And exactly. It's that same relaxation. So you really feel the art completely.
Right. Because the world is constantly impacting us, but we've created these walls of assumption and defense in a way. And if we take it in fresh, like a new painting, it's like it can really hit us in a very deep part of our consciousness.
Completely, yes. Wow. Well, if you're already practicing that with art, you've got some basic principles of stroking already down.
Well, good. Thank you. So we'll go to a museum and do that. And I'd be great. Because you're like that at museums, right? I mean,
yes.
All right.
Completely.
We'll go to the Museum of Modern Art and I'll look at some pieces. Thank you, Lisa. So if people want to get in touch with you.
Yes, they can. Check out my website, lovingourlovelife.com. My phone number is there, 646-492-0948. And my email, lisa@lovingourlovelife.com.
Right. Thank you, Lisa. Loving Our Love Life. I think and you're just going for it. You're just going into the world of unknown pleasure.
Yeah. I can't find anything better to do.
Well, probably no one can, right? Thanks. Thanks for talking.
Thank you, Alan, very much.
And I'll be in touch. I look forward to seeing you again. And seeing what you're up to next, you know, it's like I see just a whole other level of awakening happening for you here.
Yes, I'm writing a book that is describing this pleasure path.
Is it called Loving Your Love Life? No.
No, you know, I'm still working on the title, but I think it's going to be something along the lines of the pleasure path.
The pleasure path, with throwing in your spiritual awareness, right?
Right, exactly.
Great. Well, that's very exciting. Thanks. I'll be in touch with you.
Great.
Okay.
Talk to you soon.
Okay. How do you say your last name again?
Carrillo.
Lisa Carrillo. I've been talking to Lisa Carrillo from Loving Your Love Life and
loving our love life.
Loving our love life?
Yes.
Loving our love life. Okay. Loving our love life. Thanks. And she'll be on a panel at the Meta Center coming up on March 28th, 2013. I'll be hosting that. And you can go to my website, newrealities.com. You can actually look at my whole sexuality series where I interview lots of people from many different perspectives under the sexuality banner. Also included there are other topics like human potential, new sciences, metaphysics. And this Thursday, March 14th, I'm also hosting Joe DeSena at the Boot Center. You can look at newrealities.com for more information. He's giving a lecture on how to break the habit of being yourself, which has locked us into these habitual patterns. Thanks for listening tonight. You could reach me at newrealities@earthlink.net. And again, you can find any other updates on the website, newrealities.com. And I'll be back next week. Thank you.